coming to you as part of Political Perspectives, as in turn part of the incomparable, well, it's AM News and Public Affairs block on your community radio, KBOO Portland. It's 9:59, coming up at 10. We'll hear all of yesterday evening's flashpoints generously shared with us from our siblings in struggle in the San Francisco Bay Area out of KPFA in Berkeley, part of the Pacifica Network, and we thank them for their participation. Followed at 11, the Radio Zine bringing you the Bradcast, news of Stanford University's changes in addressing sexual assault, and George Takei's plea to Donald Trump to take nuclear weapons seriously, and accusations of false news. We've got another day or so in which you can make your, shall we say, contribution to community radio double. That's right. All new memberships doubled. All returning memberships that are increasing over previous years, the difference will be doubled by the Collins Foundation and the SSI Shredding Systems. So we thank them, and we'd love to thank you, but we can't until you go to kboo.fm, click on the word donate. That's right. So, with that, here's Flashpoints right after these important community announcements. Stay tuned.
KBOO Community Radio is in this year's Willamette Week Give Guide. The Give Guide highlights 140 local nonprofits doing some great work. But give to KBOO and Give Guide today and help us highlight the impact community radio has throughout the Willamette Valley. The Give Guide is an easy, secure way to make a gift to KBOO. You get Chinook book discounts, free great stuff, and your donation receipt right in your inbox. If you aren't a KBOO member yet, now's the time to join. Your Give Guide contribution will be matched one-to-one. In fact, extra gifts to KBOO will be matched too. It's a great way to help us secure our challenge match. Go to kboo.fm and click on the yellow banner on the top of the screen. Thank you for supporting KBOO.
Join KBOO Community Radio and Sean Stewart on Friday, December 30th from 8 p.m. to midnight as we end the year with a live music extravaganza, potluck, and ladies' jam. We will be featuring the avant-garde experimentalism of the Institute for Creative Dying, Brandon Conway of the Creative Music Guild, and the ladies' jam featuring Gabby Holt, Stephanie Selza, and many more. We will also be featuring guest DJ Kathleen Heisler and Rock and Roll by the Carotids. Come on down to KBOO Community Radio, located at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, right off East Burnside, next to the Jupiter Hotel and the Doug Fir Lounge. Again, that's Friday, December 30th, from 8 p.m. to midnight. Don't forget to bring a snack to share and an instrument to jam on.
And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. The U.S. State Department declared the 35 Russian diplomats from the Washington, D.C. embassy and the consulate in San Francisco persona non grata and gave them and their families 72 hours to leave the U.S. The move follows calls from senior U.S. senators to sanction Russian officials who are believed to have played a role in the hacking, which some lawmakers referred to as America's political Pearl Harbor. Well, that's from the BBC. We are welcoming to the airwaves Robert Perry. He is the founder of ConsortiumNews.com. He's been watching various aspects of this situation very closely. Well, Bob, you wrote about it yesterday, that this could be coming, and here it is today. Your response?
Well, you know, we still haven't seen the evidence that there actually was this, both the hacking by the Russians and the leaking of the information then to WikiLeaks. There was an interesting report that was put out today. That according to the New York Times was going to be detailing this evidence, and it was a report by the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security. But it really didn't say anything. It basically acknowledged that in terms of the key point of whether or not the Russians had provided this evidence to WikiLeaks, it says, you know, the U.S. government assesses that this information was leaked to the press and publicly disclosed. When you see a phrase like the U.S. government assesses, that really kind of means the U.S. government is guessing. But we still haven't seen any real evidence of this. And I was told by a well-placed intelligence source that while it seems pretty solid that Russian intelligence has been trying to penetrate various email accounts and other situations like that in the United States, as much as we do to them, there is a much greater doubt that the Russians were the source of the material to WikiLeaks. And we know that WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange and one of his associates, former British ambassador Craig Murray, have specifically denied that the Russians were the source of the material. Murray, who claims to have met with at least either the source or representative of one of the sources in Washington last September, says that there were two batches of information. One was from the DNC, which he claims came from a disgruntled Democrat, and the second was the information from the Podesta files. And the suggestion he's made is that came from an U.S. intelligence leaker. And it turns out that, you know, that John Podesta was not just the chairman of Hillary Clinton's campaign; he was also part of the Podesta Group, which represents a number of foreign governments, including Saudi Arabia. So the idea that the U.S. intelligence would have an interest in finding out what those communications were between the Podesta Group and the Saudi government and a number of other governments would certainly make some sense. So you still have this question of actually, did the Russians not just hack into these accounts, but did they then supply the material to WikiLeaks, who then supplied it to the American people? And it also should be said that none of this information was false, as far as we know. It was all essentially accurate material. In the case of the DNC material, it related to how the DNC was tilting the playing field in favor of Hillary Clinton to sort of prevent Bernie Sanders from winning the nomination. And in the case of the Podesta files, what was released there included Hillary Clinton's speeches to Wall Street interests, which she was trying to hide from the American people, and other information about how the Clinton money machine had been engaged in sort of pay-to-play operations. So the material seems to have been not just truthful, but newsworthy. But we now have gotten into this issue of, well, did the Russians leak it to the American public? And now the Obama administration, in this effort essentially to discredit the Donald Trump election, is going to extraordinary lengths to make that the issue, not the question of what did this information actually show.
Listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, we're speaking with Robert Perry. He's the founder of ConsortiumNews.com. He's an award-winning investigative reporter who has reported for some of the major news organizations in this country and then founded Consortium some 20 years ago, won awards for his work. Bob, one has the feeling that part of this, at least in the context of what's happening with Russia and the expelling of these diplomats, it seems that Obama, part of it is very personal, that he doesn't want there to be a possibility that there could be sort of a peaceful resolution, that the United States could, in fact, cut a deal around this very bloody situation of Syria? It almost feels like sour grapes.
Well, I think President Obama has had a very complex relationship with both President Putin and Russia. For a large part of his presidency, he worked very closely with President Putin. They talked regularly. They collaborated on key issues. Putin was extremely helpful to Obama. For instance, it was Putin who got the Syrian government to surrender its stockpile of chemical weapons in 2013, which prevented Obama from going forward with his plans to bomb Syria. It was also Putin who got the Iranians to make concessions relating to their plans were on a nuclear program. But it was Russia that played a key role to achieve that diplomatic breakthrough, which is possibly the most important diplomatic move that President Obama accomplished in his 8 years. But then there was this effort, in part by the neoconservatives still inside the government, the U.S. government, to blow that relationship up, and it was blown up around Ukraine. Assistant Secretary of State Victoria Nuland, who's a very staunch neocon and was a favorite of Secretary of State Clinton's, essentially orchestrated or helped orchestrate the push that removed elected President Viktor Yanukovych from Ukraine and set in motion this ugly civil war that Ukraine has been engaged in, and drove a wedge between President Obama and President Putin. After that, because of all the almost the hysterical propaganda that began to emerge around that issue and in attacking everything Russian, the New York Times became a virtual billboard of every anti-Russian propaganda theme that could be imagined, as did the Washington Post and other major news organizations in the United States, that Obama, instead of standing up to that, instead of firing Nuland and saying, we're not going to go that direction, he caved in. He basically went along with the neocons and the liberal hawks who wanted this new Cold War. And, of course, there's a huge momentum in Washington. I've been here since the 70s. And you can sort of see it sometimes when there are trillions of dollars at stake in military contracts and other kinds of expensive programs that can be justified by international tensions. And we've seen it on a smaller scale, really, with the war on terror, where that was a way to keep the military-industrial complex going after the first Cold War ended. But now there's this opportunity for a new Cold War and trillions of dollars more for nuclear weapons, for fancy weapon systems, for new jet fighters, for much bigger ticket items than the war on terror justified. So there's a huge momentum in Washington to stir up this new hostility toward Russia, and much of it has been based on propaganda and disinformation stemming from the U.S. State Department. But anyone who sort of questions this is then attacked and accused of being a Russian stooge and so forth. So we've seen almost not just a new Cold War, but a new McCarthyism. And in this context, we now have seen this effort to excuse what the DNC was doing in terms of sabotaging Sanders, what Hillary Clinton was doing when she was trying to hide the contents of her speeches to Wall Street. And that's being now wrapped up into this new effort to demonize Russia further. But the question for a journalist is really, well, what's the evidence? And so far, it has not been presented. And you know, just the New York Times this evening put out a report saying that they cited this FBI DHS report saying it was going to be detailing the evidence, but it doesn't. Most of the report is about how to protect your computer from malware. But to the degree that it does talk at all about this this issue of who hacked what, it basically just goes back and says the U.S. government assesses that it, that this information was leaked to the press and publicly disclosed, but there's no evidence of that. And then we now we see in the larger piece in the New York Times that goes along with this, the acknowledgement that a more detailed report on the intelligence will be published in the next 3 weeks, i.e. before President Obama leaves office, I guess. But then it says, though much of that detail, especially evidence collected from implants in Russian computer systems, tap conversations and spies, is expected to remain classified. In other words, the U.S. government is saying, we've also penetrated their computers, but we're not going to tell the American people what we found, because that would be, I guess, too much. So we're still being told, take this on faith. Has the CIA ever misled you on anything? And this has become now this foundational moment for an escalation of hostilities with nuclear-armed Russia. And this game is getting more and more dangerous, yet that has been almost ignored by the mainstream press. The idea that if this keeps up, and this includes not just words, it includes the United States now putting anti-ballistic missile systems in Eastern Europe, which the Russians see as direct threats to their security, and could possibly lead them to react to some false alarm in their radar systems, where they have to immediately decide whether to launch a nuclear strike against the United States. So we've moved to a very, very dangerous level. But there's still this kind of cavalier behavior on the part of the Obama administration, frankly, and the mainstream U.S. press.
And these are the times, if you will, when the corporate press, particularly the Washington Post and the New York Times, really become a very effective arm of